The Right Chamber Podcast.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Produced by the Ron Grimley Undergraduate Centre.
Welcome to the Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
I'm Dr. Victor Adeira.
And I'm Dr. Jasprit Kaur. Today we have Dr. Zarin and Dr. Omar, and we'll be discussing
Surviving FY1.
And we love hearing from our listeners. If you have any topic suggestions, want to share your thoughts, or would like to appear as a guest, please drop us an email at media.team@rguc.co.uk.
All right, so let's get started. The first question I have for you guys today is, where did you spend your FY1 training and what jobs did you do? So if we start with you, Sarah.
I had my F1 job at Newcrofts. I started on respiratory, and then I had gen surg and obs and gynae.
Okay, awesome. And how about you, Yom?
So I did my FY1 training at Russell Hall Hospital here in Dudley. And I started with urology, then general surgery, and I ended with cardiology.
So how did you feel transitioning from a medical student to suddenly having responsibilities as a doctor?
I think I've managed the transition okay. I think that was mainly due to my choice of deanery, because I feel like I was a little stressed about having that transition from student to someone with responsibility. So I thought it was comforting to be in a deanery which was in the university that I went to, because I went to UOB. So I'd been to these hospitals before. And Newcross also takes like a big cohort of F1s, a lot of which are Birmingham graduates. So it was nice to come to work and know that I have some sort of responsibility. But looking around, it's just a lot of people that I already know. So there's comfort in I already have some friends and my colleagues I don't feel so apprehensive to approach because I know them already. So I think that made the transition quite nice for me.
So it's like the familiarity of the environment. What about you, Omar?
I think a little bit similar as well. I have mixed feelings about this time last year when first started. I thought initially it was a little bit overwhelming at times. I started FY1 on call, so I was on twilight shifts where I was covering from 2 p.m. until midnight on general surgery. And during that time, I have some medical school knowledge of general surgery, but what we actually see in practice is very, very different. You're faced with the practicalities of things, so knowing how to use the system, the computer system, or how to prescribe certain things. And even though you know this treatment for a certain condition, however, knowing how to get to that in that very stage of FY1 can be quite difficult. And even something as simple as prescribing paracetamol, I don't even know where to get started. So I think it was overwhelming at times. There was the element of familiarity for me because I studied at University of Birmingham as well, and Russell's Hall was one of my placement hospitals I had in fourth year. So I was a bit familiar with the place, a little bit familiar with the system. However, that doesn't say that it was a little bit of a shock where just starting into an unfamiliar, even though it's familiar, but it felt unfamiliar at many times.
Mm, yeah, that's awesome. So it's that kind of balance between familiarity, but then also with a hint of a bit of excitement with the unknown as well. So that's great. I think that's something common amongst both of your stories. Okay, so what I'd like to ask is, now entering FY1 training, was it what you expected doctoring to be like? Did it meet your expectation, and did you feel prepared for it?
I don't necessarily know what my expectations of doctoring particularly was. It's not like I watched a load of medical dramas or something. So I don't think I had an expectation in my mind.
I did.
But maybe I did because I wasn't expecting this. It was a lot more paperwork and a lot more like standing around and waiting for things than I expected. I think being prepared, I think university can only do so much. You can be as book smart as you like and study really hard, but it's kind of like what Omar was saying, you can have all the knowledge, but when it comes to, all right, I'm requesting an x-ray and they want me to put like the clinical indication, I don't know. So things like trying to work that sort of system, or I mean, again, universities can have as many assistantship periods as they like, but it's not the same when it's just you on your own. So I think probably our university tried its best to give us those opportunities and prepare us, but it really is just a bit of a trial by fire.
Yeah, the learning curve for FY1, it can be just quite steep, isn't it? But that's great that you felt, you know, you were somewhat prepared to take on FY1. How about you?
So I think similarly, most of the job is admin, which I was not expecting in medical school. And I think, you know, as watching Grey's Anatomy and other, and also even being on placement, sometimes we tend to see the action part rather than just the, when we go, for example, to clinics, we're going to see the bronchoscopies, or we're going to see certain procedures. So we kind of skip those admin parts while we're in medical school, especially on placements, and we just tend to see the clinical practice. But what happens in day-to-day, we're faced with loads of admin, paperwork, waiting around for computer systems to work, etc. So that was all fairly different to what I anticipated. Being a doctor.
That's so true. Like when you're a student, you show up for ward round and then it's done and you go home, but you don't see the 20 minutes that doctor tried to log into their computer beforehand. Mm. So it's a lot of waiting.
So apart from like the frustrating part of technology, what were the challenging aspects of like being an F1?
I think, so when you're a medical student, you're just, if you're asked a question or if you're looking after a patient, you can always have the fallback that I'm just a med student. When you're a doctor and you're on call, starting FY1, people expect you to take up responsibility. And I think that responsibility part is something that is not as present while you're in medical school. And I think it can be quite a huge burden. However, it can be quite exciting that, okay, so this patient is in front of me. I need to do everything I can to figure out what's going wrong and how best to treat them. Who do I need to speak to? Where does this patient need to go? Do they need admitting? Are they being discharged? So I think the responsibility part can be quite daunting, but also at the same time exciting, as it's something that you've not experienced before in med school. I don't know if you guys felt the same way.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. You go from one side of, okay, I'm a medical student, so there's that background with everything that you do, but now you're the doctor that, you know, the nurses are calling to. It's you that you get that bleep at 1 a.m. at night about seeing and reviewing this case, and you've got to make those quick decisions. So I think I had a similar experience to you.
It's almost that like feeling of like, oh well, I can't just say, well, actually no, I'm a medical student. You have that responsibility.
Kind of sucks, I missed that.
What about you, Zarin?
I mean, no, I definitely do agree. I think that is a huge part of it, that you don't have that sort of fallback anymore. Although it's the F1, I feel like people are still forgiving and they are still acknowledging that you're still learning. Like they know that you've only just graduated, and it is okay to say, actually, I don't really know the answer to that. To your consultants, be like, I don't know the answer, maybe I'll read on that. And then similarly to your patients, you can always say, oh, I don't really know the answer right now, I'll talk to my senior and I'll come back and tell you that, and that's okay. Aside from like medical knowledge stuff that I found hard was now having to manage like your life. Like I know it's obviously different. Some people live at home, some people live out on their own, But now having to manage your life where you have your own paycheck, you're paying your own bills, you pay rent for your flat, you're having to put savings in now, managing things like your rota, your leave, having to sometimes fight like with the rota department. It's a battle outside of work with still like work-related things. I think admin stuff is hard.
Yeah. You know, all of a sudden you've got full-time work and at the same time you've got to balance it with life stuff. And, you know, just regular grocery shopping and making sure you've, you know, timetabled everything as you should so it all fits.
It's like adulthood with extra responsibilities.
Yeah. It's very adult.
And it's a disruption to the routine at the end of the day, because normally we're used to med school, we're going to placement from a certain time to another certain time, and then come back home, we've got our extracurricular activities, whether it's societies, etc. And we're surrounded by friends. But when you come and work as a doctor, your routine is very different. You have shifts sometimes at unsocial hours, you're working 1 in 3, 1 in 4 weekends, you're working overnight. So before being a doctor, a lot of us would have had certain routines where they go, for example, gym between this time and this time. But for me, that completely disrupted after starting FO1. I've lost my routine and that continuity that I had in med school, where and I think that can take a big toll on you, and you need to figure out how to adjust and how to fit those things back into your schedule.
And what you were just saying as well, like it can be quite isolating where in uni you live in a house share of like 6 other people and you hang out all the time, and then you go to placement and you hang out with your friends. Whereas at work, if you're on a twilight or you're working a night shift, there's 3 other doctors. I mean, everyone's really nice, you might get along, but are they your best buddies? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. And, you know, you come home and you're really tired and maybe you don't want to go to your 3-hour football session or... I don't know. It can be quite isolating.
But also, like, making friends, plans with your friends is so hard now. Like,
trying to coordinate is impossible.
It's like, in 2 months, is this date free?
Yeah. Have we all got our annual leaves lined up?
Lined up.
Yeah. So permit me to ask. So as you progress through F1 now, you're getting more used to the system. You're getting... more used to the work requirements. Do you find that balance then gets easier? Or how would you say it is now being F2 doctors now? Has it gotten any better?
I think so. I think I know myself, like outside of work, I'm quite lazy. So I knew when I started F1 that it would be very easy for me to fall into that routine of I'm going to come home from work and I'm going to sit and do nothing. And then that would just become my life. And I obviously did not want that to become my life. So I made it like a very clear point in my mind, like from the offset, work is always going to be tiring. It's not going to get any less tiring. I'm going to get older and get more tired. So now when I'm like 24, 25, and I probably can, you know, hang out with my friends until 11 o'clock and then firm it for work the next day, I'm going to do that now. So I made it a point to make plans with my friends, do my like activities, do my arts and crafts and stuff, force myself to do that, because then you build that routine of this is what my new life is like.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't, and you very easily slip into I'm going to sit and watch 3 hours of Netflix and then it's time for bed, then it's just a bit too difficult.
Yeah,
so I think I tried from the start and it slips here and there, but other than that.
Yeah.
No, but on that point, you have to take initiative, I think, more initiative, whereas things are a bit easier back in, let's say, in medical school. You're surrounded by lots of people. Activities are there for you to do, whereas here you just have to take that extra initiative to capitalize on your free time, on your weekends that you're not working, to try to arrange something. So it becomes a bit more difficult, but it's very possible. And I think you can have a very good social life during FY1 whilst also working your 48-hour average per week rota or your long on calls. So it's possible, but definitely more difficult than being in med school.
Yeah. Just a little extra effort, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's very, very worth it, isn't it? Because as much as, you know, we are working really hard, we really do need that space to de-stress and recharge at the same time. I know sometimes we played football, didn't we, Elmar, with the doctors. And the things like that is just really, really good to recharge and, well, be the best doctor you can be after that. Okay, so if I ask you a question now, by the end of F1, what would you say is your biggest takeaway from the journey of F1? What's your biggest takeaway? So if we start with you, Zarin.
God, I think that's a hard one. I still stand by my point that I raised before, that I think a huge thing is to start as you mean to go on. So to like make plans, and it can be overwhelming to start work, but work is not your life, and to have things outside of work. And then when you're having a nice time at home, then you're less like of a grumpus at work. So I guess that sort of affects work also. But then sort of in the workplace, I don't really know. I think being comfortable and confident to approach your seniors, because as an F1, there will be times where you struggle. As an F2, there's times where you struggle. When you're IMT or whatever, everybody's struggling. Everybody struggles. But if you feel like you can approach your seniors and just say, actually, I'm confused with this, or I don't really understand, or how can I do this, then it's not scary. It's just, I don't know how to do this. Can you help? And then that's okay. So just to feel comfortable to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. In the sense that when I was an F1, the toughest jobs I had was when I had to call and actually discuss with seniors. Because then, you know, we try to flatten that hierarchy, but it is still there at the back of your mind. I'm about to discuss this case with this senior doctor who knows so much more than me.
For sure. You know. I used to write out a script.
Yeah.
Like I'd write out fully line by line what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it just flows. You're like, yes, yes. Yeah.
And I think most people, you know, they are quite aware of the fact that we're new starters and, you know, we won't always get everything perfect. We're still in our growth and learning process. But, you know, you do hear sometimes of that phone call you make to refer something, you know, and it's, you know, why did you refer this? And, you know, my consultant asked for it. I'll get back to you, you know. And, you know, it's not the nicest position to always be in, isn't it?
It's character building. It's character building.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes it's okay.
I think it's also sometimes when, like, you hear and your colleagues are like, well, I'll call that particular registrar or consultant, and they yelled at me. So it gives you fear, like, beforehand to, like, write the script down and then do it.
It definitely humbles you a little bit. So I think you will get humbled a few times, which is okay, completely okay. But that makes you, when the next time when you're calling, more prepared. And a lot of the time, you know, our consultants will ask us, do a referral to this or this. And we're not aware of the reason. So do not be afraid to ask for that. So a few times, for example, my consultant asked me to refer to renal. So I just, if you just say, okay, no problem, and you just refer to that speciality without fully understanding the reasoning your senior, well, I'm sure the senior had a pretty good reason to make that referral. So, but you go in to make that referral without having that full idea of what the reason behind it is, you won't get the point across, and sometimes your referral might be rejected. So at that point, whenever you're asked something to do something that you're unsure what to do, just don't be afraid to actually just ask, why exactly are we referring to, you know, just for my own learning. I think I love to use this phrase quite a lot, for my own learning. Why is this necessary? Or in a non...
They can't shout at you after you've said, for my learning.
Yeah, that is great.
Exactly.
That's a good phrase to use.
Exactly. So you're not challenging the senior. You're just trying to understand more. And so you can provide a better patient care at the end of the day. Because if you're doing referrals without actually knowing why you're doing it, or requesting imaging without knowing it, then you probably will either get your referral rejected or not get the full story across.
Yeah.
And I think even just similar to another point where when you're on the ward rounds or you're asked to whether dictate, because a lot of the time we're on the ward rounds, we're dictating something, and sometimes you're unsure about what's being told, even from like medical perspective, where something that you haven't come across before, or for example, on general surgery ward rounds, where they're prescribing the patient's wound and the wound, and they're telling about the wound edges and about the, so certain stuff you've not heard of before, and they're talking about specific anatomical sites. So it's very easy sometimes to just brush it off and just pretend you haven't heard it and just type out everything else. But at that point, just stop and ask, I'm sorry, I actually don't know what this is. Do you mind if you tell me? And most seniors will actually be happier to explain, you know, take a step back, explain to you what it is, than them finding out later that you haven't fully documented what they wanted to say or...
Yeah.
I think abbreviations as well, sometimes we're just like, don't know what that
what
was.
Does that mean? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think as you said, it's very, very important having kind of that courage to just say, can we just slow down for a second? Just for my learning, I'd really like to, I really like that phrase. I think I'll be using that. But yeah, for instance, general surgery world rounds can be quite fast paced, isn't it? And sometimes it can be a bit of an information overload. So I think that's a really good tip to just, if you really don't understand something, I think the seniors will be receptive, you know, in most cases to say, okay, because people love teaching what they do know and passing on their knowledge. So yeah, I think that's definitely a good one. What would you say is your biggest takeaway from FY1?
So biggest takeaway probably, I mean, that's a difficult question, but I think being confident in your own abilities. I think a lot of the times where, or myself and other FY1s, we're not very confident to do something. We're not confident to start a specific management. We're not confident to speak up against something that we've seen that it's not going well within a department or within the clinical environment, or sometimes we're not confident to make that referral. So it's I think confidence for me is a very big thing. So just learning how to be confident in your own abilities and knowing that if you pass medical school, you've done an absolutely great job to get to where you are. So having that confidence within yourself and just to inspire you just to keep going and keep pushing and to make the most of the jobs. I think that's one of probably the biggest takeaways.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for some people that confidence, it comes relatively quickly. For other people, it might take a little bit more time. But I think just trusting in that process that with every day that you come to work, it's another experience that you have, you know, you're building and your confidence will just rise with time. So that's great that you're feeling confident now.
Well, confident in certain aspects, but not always in others.
Yeah. So it's not a process.
It's a process and we all will get there. I think just trusting the process, trusting that it will come and not being afraid just to do things. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if you want to make things happen, especially in the NHS, unfortunately we struggle with understaffing and lots of issues. So to make the most of your work within the NHS, to make sure patients get the treatment in appropriate time, etc., you need to be confident and take that extra step for your patients. So yeah.
So how do you feel like now? We're 1.5 months into being F2s now. So how do you feel like transitioning from baby doctors to not so much baby doctors now?
I don't know. I think for me it's also a little difficult because I've moved trust. Mm-hmm. So this first month, like, I'm still trying to figure out where to find things on Sunrise and things like that. So in that aspect, like, me and the F1s are all in the same boat. Like, if they don't know how to find something on Sunrise, well, I also don't know where to find that. Sorry, I can't help.
Blind leading the blind.
Yeah. But I think in terms of, like, what you were saying, confidence, it's not necessarily something that has had to be worked on. But then when you show up on the ward and you see the F1s, not to like crap on the F1s, but it's automatically like you, the way you might talk to patients or the way that you talk to your consultant colleagues, like it feels a bit more comfortable and you can sense that they perhaps aren't so comfortable within it. Yeah. So I think the transition sort of happens naturally, and then before you know it, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, no, I am more comfortable with this now.
And what job are you doing now for your first F2 jobs?
Oh, stroke.
Stroke.
Respiratory.
Respiratory, okay. And how have you found the transition?
So I think the transition was better than transitioning from med school to F1. I think it was smoother. You had gradual improvement in everything over the last year, from knowing how to, when and where to escalate, knowing the teams, being clinically confident in your clinical acumen. So I think that all improves as you go to FY2. I think I found it some parts were challenging as well, because we start, for example, we start overnight clerking shifts, which we don't normally do as FY1s. We have a lot, naturally, you're expected to know more, and for certain things, you're expected to know how to manage it if it arises, when you may not be when you're an FY1. So I think there's a bit more responsibility, but I think you tend to slide into it more easily than FY1 training. But it's exciting. It's definitely exciting with more, you know, more responsibility, but also more reward, I think.
Yeah.
Do you ever like pick up like little tips and like tricks when you're in like F1 that you would want to pass it on to your F1s now?
So I think back to the part of confidence. So sometimes I've had times where I've become overconfident, and that's where mistakes can happen. So I think becoming overconfident can also be dangerous. So finding that right balance of knowing when to escalate. And sometimes certain things, you're not actually expected to manage it, and you're expected to escalate to your seniors and bring, especially in specialties where things can be quite niche. For example, if you're on a vascular surgery or you're on hematology. So because a lot of the time on the weekends, you're asked to cover a territory where you've never seen before, or a specialty that you've never worked in before. So knowing when to escalate, not being afraid of escalation, even if, I think it's all, if you're in doubt, always escalate. I think that's definitely the, it's always better,
way.
Yeah. Always better to escalate and then it may not be necessary than to not escalate and then harm comes to other colleagues or patients. So I think knowing that balance, so the making sure your confidence is the right balance between not overly confident but also not confident, and then the knowing where and how to escalate and not being afraid to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, on the point of not being afraid to do so, I think that's also very important. You know, we have built some gut instincts from med school to passing through F1. So, you know, there comes that point where you're really not sure sometimes, should I escalate this, should I not? I think just erring on the side of caution, and if you feel you might need to, then just do it. No one will... you know, we'll be mad at you for that.
Maybe a little bit, but still with it.
But, you know, as you start, then you get better. So I think that's a good point. And how about you, tips and tricks for our F1 starters?
Not to repeat the same point, but I genuinely do think writing down your S-bar before you give someone a call, because like you said, that is something that frightens everyone. I've got to speak to this like urology registrar about something that I don't know anything about. To actually just write out your S-bar with your blood results, like with everything, so that when they ask you a question, be like, oh yeah, I have the answer here. You don't have to faff around for 10 minutes, making yourself feel stupid. You might not look stupid because they're understanding, but it makes you feel stupid. So I think it is a good idea to have everything written down.
Yeah, especially because we use like a lot of like different systems. It's just good to like just have everything on a piece of paper when they ask you questions.
Also, I would say, I don't know if it's really a tip or a trick, per se, but to have trust in your colleagues. Because I feel like with coming to F1 and you suddenly feel like you have this responsibility, for a lot of people, it can be really difficult to let go at 5 p.m. Yeah. And you feel like I have to, obviously you finish the jobs that are pressing, or like if you're actively dealing with someone, absolutely stay late and do that. But otherwise, I think part of the job is doing an effective handover. Mm-hmm. It's part of being a doctor. So to have an effective handover and then to trust your colleague to take that handover and action it, you don't need to go home and stress until 10 p.m. about what happened to this patient if you've given a good handover and you believe that your colleague will carry on that work. I know for some people that can be really stressful and they can't leave work at work.
It's hard to like switch off for some people.
But I think it's a good thing to get into practice of, and then to just remind yourself that like your colleagues are also there to help.
Yeah.
So you pass the baton as such and then go and do your fun stuff.
I had actually this issue last year, and I think education supervisors are great. Speak to them. And my own education supervisor actually gave me a very good tip on how to make sure I delegate tasks appropriately, but also to how to divide my attention towards the urgent, important tasks. So now whenever I do something, or after a ward round where let's say you have 20 tasks to do, you can't start on them all at once. So you need to divide them, something that's urgent and important, something that's urgent but not important, so not as time sensitive, and also the non-urgent, non-important, which the stuff that you can potentially wait until tomorrow, and the important but not urgent. So again, let's say making a cancer referral, but it's important, but it's not urgent where you need to do it within an hour, let's say. You have until, let's say, the rest of the day to complete it. So knowing how to delegate tasks and manage your time effectively, I think that helps you with not staying over time and make sure you hand over the tasks that actually needed to be seen by the out-of-hour colleagues, and not just handing over, for example, something that can be done the next day without affecting the patient in any way.
Absolutely. I think handover, as you've said, writing things down, these are great tips, and I'm sure our viewers would really appreciate it.
Lovely talking to you.
All right. So I think that comes to the end of The Right Chamber. It's been absolutely lovely having you guys on. We hope you guys, our viewers, have enjoyed our discussion. You've gained a bit more insight into the life of an FY1 doctor and what it's like, new juniors starting at the Trust.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for having us.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.
Produced by the Ron Grimley Undergraduate Center.